Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
could very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are much important, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of your remedies in the law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremedyisinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what your hot points are interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. If it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much in the way you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you just knew your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the password on the thing. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button, fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you'll get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make, if your remedy is in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. The information provider's famous record for advertising at your remedy is in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen. And when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. I'll touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at your remedy is in the law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
All right. Well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. Yeah, thank you so very much, Martin. We appreciate that. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects and something that we will be offering relatively soon, within the near future, a new product, if you would, for lack of a better term, new service. And that is working hand in hand with what Justice Beshear offers on the Saturday night call with regards to creating an asset base that is insulated from you so that your activity could not result in a judgment that would have you lose what you worked so hard to obtain. And then, of course, the Monday night call where we show you how to establish yourself as one of the people. When we talk about we the people in order to form a more perfect union, you're not one of we the people as of this moment, unfortunately. You may think you are, but the truth in law is that you're not. Simple example would be if you wanted to purchase a firearm, is somebody going to ask you questions about, you know, your history and things like that? Well, an American national, someone who is one of we the people, those questions don't come up. So tonight we're going to talk about something with regards to land, and that is how to put your land in a position where it also is outside of the United States, and that title we often refer to as holding land in allodium or having allodial title to your land. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John for him to expand upon that. Brother?
Thank you for your very kind and gracious introduction, Martin and Michael. Thank you. Land patents are a means of transferring title to an individual that provides certain protections while you in that transaction. The most of the lands that like the U.S. Commission on Land Patents, or the BLM, takes care of, fall into one of four categories: sovereign state-owned lands, lands directly sold to settlers from the federal government, land granted to the state or for sale use, and lands granted by a prior sovereign, i.e., you know, a lot of the Spanish land grants like in Texas or Louisiana. Some of the land, I had the honor and privilege of seeing a land grant that was signed by Napoleon in the Louisiana Territory that came up for a question a while back. They were a city jurisdiction that was incorporated some of the land within it, and some of it was they went ahead and decided that they were going to acquire some of the property for a city and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they the individuals all of a sudden were served with certain tax documents. And this has happened quite a bit where and in Texas, they finally put a stop to it via law. They're working on doing that in Florida right now, in Louisiana and some of the other states, so that states and counties can't go out and annex properties that they didn't already possess. A while back in Texas, Harris County annexed Kingwood. And all the people, their water bills, everything changed. And they had to start doing things the same way that the city of Houston did. And what happened was, actually it was Houston, the city of Houston annexed an unincorporated subdivision called Kingwood. And it was a high-end pre-planned community. There were threats of bodily harm, and if they didn't put it back, and this and that, and it was something that the people did not approve of. The ones that they the properties that were annexed. But what happened was that some of the individuals had land patents that predated the first entry of Texas into the Union. And with that, you've heard, many of you have heard the saying Six Flags under Texas, well, or over Texas. Well, Texas has had Six Flags, and this is the second time that Texas has been part of the United States, and both times the Enablement Act that brought Texas into the states, it was written into the act that Texas can secede from the Union without explanation or notice. There's no two-year waiting period or two-year waiting period. They can secede anytime they choose. And even the assets that are on military bases that are owned by the United States government now become assets of Texas. And railroads there, et cetera, everything would become assets of Texas. This is only possible because written into the original documents that the lands were transferred to or into or from make those provisions. This is what's critical. There's some lands in Pennsylvania. There's a strip of a French land grant there and a British land grant that make the property owner the highest taxing authority. Many of you are familiar with British feudal law, where the landowners are the highest taxing authority, and they're the ones that dutifully forward taxes to the crown in Great Britain. And some of you may remember the old Errol Flynn Robin Hood movie where the lady's pleading while this gentleman who has this inn is being flogged, and she says, "You can't do that to him. He's a landowner." And technically, they couldn't. They were coloring outside the lines very, very badly under British law. But what happened was that a lot of the grants that came to the U.S. that were made by Great Britain in an effort of Great Britain to try to garner authority and not necessarily an act of prima nupta. And some of you have heard of the term prima nupta before. In the movie, Mel Gibson movie, Braveheart, they showcased the term prima nupta, meaning first night, meaning the landowner and that had right of first night with any newly wed woman. And the idea was to breed out the unsavory or unpleasant forms of individual that did not respond well to British feudal law or United Kingdom and et cetera in Scotland. But the issue is that those tenements may be present in the deed that you hold and you own. There are certain times when individuals can seek a title in a lodium or to trace it back to a point where they can prove that the right of taxation was never conveyed to someone else, but it's always remained with the property owner. I've spoken before on about one a city in the Austin County, in Grimes County of Texas, where the landowner, before he subdivided the property, it was a huge ranch, set up and incorporated a jurisdiction that we now call a city or a township to manage this new settlement, the new property development. With that end, he wrote into the deeds that everyone had a responsibility to pay taxes to support the city jurisdiction. Now, if you can, now the Constitution was very, very clear that governments owning land was not the flavor of the day. Quite the opposite. In fact, they said even that the U.S. government was limited to 10 miles square, District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., the forts and arsenals that were purchased land paid for, the territories and held possessions like Guam, Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, which were not part of that at the time but are now, but those are all limited to what the U.S. government can own. Now, the federal building downtown L.A., over on Wilshire, used to be federal-owned. What happened was is that there was a couple who their children, one of them slipped and fell, and a security guard, not realizing the child had just had a fall on her head, it's a 13-year-old girl, who had gone into a seizure, and he thought that she was being belligerent, a 13-year-old girl. And so he began to treat her as if she was belligerent and permanently injured her, including a C6-7 injury to her neck where she became a paraplegic. And the charge that they laid on the family was assaulting a federal officer on federal grounds. They had three felonies that they got grand jury indictments against the 13-year-old for. The family won the case because this property was well in excess of the 10 miles square that the U.S. government currently could own, and that therefore assaulting an officer on federal property could not apply. And it did not go to the appellate level, but the folks that pled the case did very well at the trial court level, and it was, and the charges against the little girl were and the little girl's family were dismissed. You go into a lot of cities now, and I was in Baton Rouge recently. I was in Tallahassee. I've been in Jacksonville recently. A handful of other cities. I've been in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the federal buildings are no longer owned by the federal government. They're owned privately, but leased to the federal government. One point that this came into play was that an individual, certain federal employees cannot be served on federal property. The process server, we had a situation where we had a judge in the Pensacola District, U.S. District Court, that was the judge was to be served, and she complained that service was improper because a federal employee cannot be served on federal property. We proved that it was privately owned and that the service was good and that she had not responded timely to the 21-day Monday next requirement for her to respond to a suit. She ignored it. It went all the way up through the magistrate justice to the chief justice, and he attempted to dismiss it also, except we proved that in the brief that we filed, we proved that it was not technically federal property, so she was legally served. She had already moved offshore and took early retirement and moved to a non-extradition country. And what was better was we were able to find that the land patent went to an individual, and that when the government originally annexed, and we've used that term earlier regarding some townships and unincorporated jurisdictions in the Texas area, but when the government annexed it to build the courthouse there, they did not have the authority under public domain to be able to annex that property, and it turns out that the original family now is being paid proper fees quietly, very quietly, for leasing of the property, and that the alleged current owners are splitting that the lease with the actual owners. The land patents are very important. That particular one was signed by Andrew Jackson, President, then President Andrew Jackson. We've had people on this call many, many times that have had land patents that were signed and assigned by Andrew Jackson. The land patent, what it is it is it signs official ownership of that property to that individual or sovereign entity. And this is one of the places where you see the word sovereign listed when we're talking about the Bureau of Land Management, that they use the term sovereign or sovereign entity in many of the discussions regarding land patents. Okay. What's very, very important is that you can request the issuance of a patent in many, many states have a formal procedure. Pennsylvania, Texas, there's many, many states that have formal procedures for that you can get patents for. Some of them have stipulations, like in Arizona, you must be the original check. If it's less than 40 acres, a patent will only be issued if there's more than five remaining on the property that you're asking to be patented. Okay, and there's cases where eminent domain was overturned and individuals were based on their land patent where property was returned to them in the Harris County, Texas area on the border of Harris County and Montgomery County. There was a new freeway called the 99 coming in, and they were doing the eminent domain thing, and this farm that was I knew the grandfather, the father, and the son, and they were going to eminent domain this freeway right through their property. What happened was is that they realized that the eminent domain did not apply because it was technically sovereign territory. And in the middle of the hearings where they even eminent ED'd out the property, they still sold the property and developed it, began housing and everything else, because they knew. And the state of Texas had to go through some serious gymnastics where over a 17-month period, they acquired the new land and right-of-way for the 99 freeway that currently is in the Houston Gulf Coast, Texas area. The land patents, very, very important. If you have not documented your property that has potential sovereign capacity, now would be a good time to do so. There's many, many hoops that you have to jump through. That are not normal in other states. Now, two of the most common, if you're seeking a loyal title, to get it with the least amount of trauma or drama, are Nevada and Texas. And they have provisions for recognizing a loyal title. In Texas, those provisions were cast into public law in the 2000 election. The 1996 election had a referendum that started it, but it wasn't until the 2000 election that it was actually cast into law. Nevada has had it since 1889. It's the A patent is, in this case, something, the land patent, it provides the capacity that provides a fee simple authority to find a simple starting point from where with which the ownership of that land can actually restart. And in many cases, you can get, seek allodial title after having a land patent completed. Any subsequent transfers after the land patent is patented would have to be transferred under something like a general warranty deed or warranty deed. Hang on a second. I apologize. I had to cough there. Something that's very, very important is that the etymology of a piece of property, where it started, is what you want to look into. Hold on. I'm going to get something to drink here. Okay, thank you.
It's really bad to have a drinking problem, isn't it, John?
Hey, drinking and driving. I mean, teaching. There we go. Hey, I'm the designated drinker. Knowing what was on the original conveyance, or in many cases, the original land grant, and the Ohio Valley has many land grants that some of them were very small. Some of them were as little as 300 acres or half a section, barely half a section. And there are, somebody was showing me once a pile of land grants that applied exclusively to the Ohio Valley. And in his binder, he had copies of over 60 separate land grants. And he was trying to explain to me that at the time, this was in 1994, that he was trying to explain to me that this was only a pittance of the land grants that were in that. And then when we got up to Fort Dutuy, actually, most Americans pronounce that differently. They pronounce it Detroit. But the land grants regarding Fort Dutuy, the French fort there, and the lands around Michigan, many of those French land grants grant sovereignty to the individual that owns the property and makes them the final taxing jurisdiction. Now, many of the land grants that apply to downtown Detroit, Fort Dutuy, many of the much of the original documentation cannot be found. It became a little embarrassing that in 1934, an individual tried to push, point out that their property was not available for eminent domain when they were trying to lay out the grid spurs and the streets. They found out that this seemed to be an impediment. There was a fire that was akin to the burning of the Reichstag, in which many of the documents were lost. Very quietly, surreptitiously went away. Somebody tried to make that happen in Texas. That's also been tried in Arizona and Nevada, trying to eliminate the original documents where the land patent was originally established, or the original deed and or the land grant. In those cases, they were Spanish land grants. Now, one thing that happened is that a couple of the original Spanish land grants, about 70 years ago, it turns out there was a family in Mexico. They the grandfather just passed away. He lived in Lomas de Chapultepec, Mexico, where he had some of the original duplicates of the Spanish land grants for some of old California and Texas. And this gentleman was, the grandfather was not that old, actually, he was my age. And he supposedly died of a heart attack on an airplane over water. He was crossing over the pond to the west. And I every time I hear about somebody having a heart attack, somebody of significance or a note, or that was part of something that was important, when I hear of them having a heart attack on a plane while over water, or hear of them passing away like Sonny Bono did, that always raises questions in my mind as to what actually happened when they especially have a heart attack and there's no way to get them to medical attention soon enough, and it occurs after they reach the point of no return on a like an overwater flight. That's specific interest because I sometimes, and it brings specific note to me because I may be a pilot and I may be an instructor pilot. And so when there's inconsistencies with sometimes the way things happen and they say, well, it was because of this or because of that, and you know differently that they things function differently, that's a big challenge. Tracing your property, your deeds back to the original land grant or land patent, and if you're in a populated state like place like New York or New Jersey, many of those properties continue to change hands sometimes every 3 or 5 years or 8 years or 10 years, and a lot of the land grants that are in those just continue to become more and harder to be able to track down. There's portions of the lands that are in some of the land grants that are in just New York and New Jersey where they like the John Hunter land grant, it's very, very hard to get any information on that land grant so many years ago that some of the people that are involved in it, it's just unbelievable that they even have the information of that they have, let alone the Hardenberg land patents and some of the other Sullivan and Ooster land grants, and the it's almost impossible to get the original data because it's like the Hardenberg patent. Some of the key information that was embarrassing to the authorities at the time or the individuals that claimed they were authorities, that things may have accidentally disappeared. So if you're going to attempt to seek title in a lodium or seek a land patent, I have to ask you the question, based on the fact that eventually – everybody would like to have lands taxed, and they would like to have control over it in some way, shape, or form, and this is an ongoing trend. Do you think it's wiser to start working on your land patent sooner or later? In the individuals, presently, the Ninth Amendment to the Constitution makes it very clear that the rights enumerated therein, the Constitution, shall not be construed to waive or usurp any other rights already held by the people. And it's very important that for those of you who don't read the Constitution very much, I'll read that again, and that's the enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. This is indicating that the Constitution may have errors in it, including the 16th Amendment, because if you can tax somebody's right to earn a living and those rights as described in the Declaration of Independence, so as to that if they don't pay that tax, that you either take away their right to earn that or you take away the proceeds so that they can't exercise that right, then is the right a right or is the tax improperly being applied? We had two situations in the last 14 months here in the Texas Gulf Coast area where individuals came up, they were property was to be sold due to taxes, and quietly the judge ruled in favor of the defendant because we had filed a brief that says that it's the defendant's right to own property and for the county to tax it, that they you take away that right. And now there's been over, in the last 26 months, there's been over 90 lawsuits there, to the point where on the 2024 election, on the ballot, we have a referendum to make it unlawful in Texas to levy tax on property. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can look it up. It's on the internet. We have a referendum right now that the primary just voted on, and it was all but passed on the primary, okay? It had we had just a few more votes, it would be law. They're still discussing and discussing some questionable votes. It may be jumping into law now. I have not been home for 3 or 4 weeks now. I'm working on some things for a couple of students, but the Republican Senatorial Convention is this Saturday, the local Rules Committee meetings is this Saturday, but the Republican Senatorial Convention is in May 11th through the 14th, and I'm hoping to be back in pocket in plenty of time for that, but the votes that have been in question may actually pass that so that in Texas there will not be property taxes shortly, okay? This is something that's been a basic effect of the fact that people have indicated, and I can't imagine where they're getting this information for these briefs, and don't think for one second that I would ever have anything to do with anything like that. And if there was somebody doing something with that, keeping their personal name out of it is very, very important so that you don't draw a target on your back. For those of you who like funnies and cartoons, there was a Sunday morning funnies guy named Gary Larson. He writes a little cartoon rag called The Far Side. And in one of Gary's cartoons, he has a picture of these two deer standing in the woods holding a conversation. And on the midriff of one of them is this big white circle with a slightly smaller red circle inside of it and a slightly smaller white circle inside of that and a red and a white and a red. So you get to the center red dot. And one deer is saying to the other, goes, "Wow, bummer of a birthmark, Hal," you know. And but the thing is that notoriety and public acclaim can be very dangerous. But people who are individually educated can be very powerful. So that if you and you know friends that you share your information with and share what you've learned with, so that they are clear on the concept, slowly you can make changes like there's no other easy way to do. And most of you already know that in the last 8 years. There's been referendums and on the ballot that, you know, your things like gun rights, you're free to open carry here in Texas. You're free to make a silencer yourself, and it doesn't have to be serialized, and you don't have to pay a tax stamp. The ATF keeps screaming, Fed Trump's the state, Fed Trump's the state, Fed Trump. No, it doesn't. And to that end, some of the feds that have attempted to make arrests here have been detained by local sheriffs. And local sheriff is actually the highest jurisdictional authority in any given jurisdiction. And he's an elected official. He's not hired help like the chief of police is. A police chief is usually designated or hired by a mayor. They're there for to take care of issues that are not criminal. That's one thing that, and, you know, like when you see these, I've heard about police shows that they, you know, play the police departments up very, very high in authority range. I don't see the evidence to support that. And I can't agree with that. Right now, one big, you know, for every county, you have a sheriff. And, see, when you ask yourself at, how many sheriffs are out there, there used to be 3,144 till a little while back the state of Florida took one of the county privileges away from the individuals that were holding it. And it took away their sheriff, which meant that their judicial standing and their Justice of the Peace Court was now rendered inert and non-valid. Many of you already know who I'm talking about. It's Disney Studios. Walt Disney's Epcot Center was given county status originally to help encourage the fiscal growth for the purpose of strengthening the economy in Florida. However, due to the fact that, quote-unquote, the superficial simple way is that they no longer have family values. The underlying was that 219 cases of sexual harassment or rape or et cetera that occurred in their jurisdiction in one 12-month period, not one of them was actually ever prosecuted. They were all dismissed. And there's a handful of other things like that that on the surface, it's, the arguments are they no longer have family values. They claim family values, so we're taking away their status. The reality of it all is much, much darker. And to that end, I personally had good friends, and there's family members that had personal friends and friends they grew up with that all resigned and left Disney Studios because Disney was coloring outside the lines. The one thing that happened was that that allowed the state to do that was that the original land patent and the Spanish land grant that was involved with part of the studios was that some of the families that were, shall we say, offended complained, and the state immediately, when it was brought to their attention, immediately seized that information and reduced the nation's number of 3,144 counties down to 3,143. And so they lost their sheriff and their judicial standing. Hold on a second. Thank you. I had to get something to drink.
We're going to pray for you and your drinking problem, John.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm the designated drinker. Yeah, I know, it's awful. I've actually had recent privilege to visit the great state of Florida and work through some land patents and some land titles back to that and learn some things that I had no idea existed. We could actually probably go into between minimum 10 to 14 days just covering title and allodium and land patents, just and some of the information that I've learned in the last 3 weeks. I could probably add half a week or a week of every single night working just on bringing the sovereignty of the land back into focus to the individual and to the jurisdictional authorities. Now, the single biggest problem with land patents and allodial title is that most of the jurists in the jurisdiction do not understand land patents and allodial title and allodium, and to them they've been a product of they've been a product of the standard education that they even now are demanding that law enforcement officials have. And you go to one of these universities and they don't teach you about land patents and titles in allodium, and they definitely don't use the term sovereignty properly. And it's, you can tell this explicitly when they use the term citizen and sovereign in the same sentence or conjugate the terms. There's no such thing as a sovereign citizen. A citizen is an entity that's property and possession under the authority of a specific governmental entity. In our case, United States, all caps, corporation. A sovereign is only under the authority of the Most High King. Now, with that, the sovereignty, there are some incredible responsibilities, meaning that technically you're under his authority. And in countries that still respect and honor sovereignty, you can go to Belgium, the Switzerland, Sweden, the Dutch Netherlands, even Great Britain hasn't been completely corrupted. And there's many, many others. But you go into there, and when it comes to a sovereign, if the sovereign is misbehaving, there's something that most people don't realize. There's a responsibility of the other sovereigns to, shall we say, correct the behavior or remove the inappropriate factor from the equation. And I'll just let you guys marinate on that one. And I know two names in the last year that were boastful, braggadocious, and they no longer appear in the registries. In fact, one of them, I accidentally ended up with one of his passports. He had 109 passports. The last time we physically saw each other was at a meeting in Aruba, and he was in our hotel room and left his passport. Actually, accidentally left three of his passports with us. I didn't realize there was three. It turned out I thought there was only two. We had them returned to him. And this last year, somehow, he died in a fire in a guard shack to his house. There's a one-guy house guard shack, and he was burned alive in it. And how he died, or et cetera, but the local law enforcement agencies won't even release. And this is in the Dutch Netherlands, and not too far from the Strake, where that wonderful composer and violinist lives, and that he does tours all over the world. But they have a responsibility, they believe, for maintaining those that are responsible directly to, quote-unquote, God. As an American national, there are some aspects that apply to go with sovereignty. That also applies with title in allodium and having a land patent. Once you escalate or elevate to these levels, please, 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 do not become a legend in your own mind. Do not become arrogant. There's something in, I believe in an intelligent designer of this third rock from the sun that we call planet Earth and home. And in the testaments that intelligent designer wrote, one of the things that he can't stand is a haughty or arrogant spirit. And he takes exception to that and takes care of those individuals very, very quickly and with and sometimes extreme prejudice. Two things don't impress me. Blood and pain, mostly my own. Things like lightning bolts, thunder, earthquakes, cracks opening up in the earth, fire from heaven. I don't get into that. So you shouldn't be interested in any of that either. In fact, quite the opposite, staying away from it. To walk humbly before the Most High King is extremely important. He grants extra grace and blessings and furthers individuals along that path of sovereignty and blessing. If you humble yourself before him, even if you're a sovereign, especially if you're a sovereign, he grants extra blessings and extra grace. And it says, when all a man's ways or woman's please the Most High King, the Most High King causes even that man's or woman's enemies to live at peace with them. Character building exercises only come for two reasons. One, because we work for it, we earned it, we screwed up, and buckle up, Spanky, this one's coming from downtown. Then the other is, there's parables that talk about the vinesman or the master craftsman. Maybe he's chiseling away at that diamond or, ouch, that hurt. You just knocked off some, he cuts away at the vine. Wait a minute, there were still some good leaves on it. Ouch, that one had good leaves on it. But he cuts away and he prunes at things so that he improves that, so that maybe that vine becomes fully, that grapevine becomes fully fruitful, or now the imperfections that were on that diamond have now been removed and now it's polished. It's an object of unbelievable beauty. But that doesn't come without great pain. And when it comes to making gold pure, the craftsman, the master craftsman, has to turn up the heat very high to get those little finite contaminants out of there. And the hotter the fire gets, the more those contaminants get removed. When you're enduring trials of various kinds, thank the Most High King. And just ask him, when I talk to him, I just say, hey, help me learn what I need to learn as quickly as possible so I can be done with this trial and move on to the next one. And that applies either whether you screwed up, you work for it, you earned it, and you deserve it, and buckle up, Spanky, this one's coming from downtown, or if the master craftsman continue that mighty work in your lives. A way that I believe we should continue in our lives is becoming unfettered from unnecessary entanglements. Seeking title in allodium and land patents is one of many, many ways that you can do that. With that, my time has come to a close. We're going to open up now for questions and answers. If you're able to stay to the subject matter topic, that would be a blessing. If you're not, please feel free to ask whatever questions you choose to ask. It's been an honor and a privilege serving all of you. With that, back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael. Thank you.
Well, thank you so very much. Ladies and gentlemen, press star two on your keypad. Star is just underneath your 7 on your keypad. Star 2 to raise your hands. For those to ask your questions, speak to John here. Hello, Caesar. For those of you on Freedoms Radio, you'll notice to the center right of the monitor that you're looking at a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click into that rectangle and then type away your comment or your question. Underneath that, you'll see a place where you can put your name and some other information, and then you just hit submit. It's very simple. And then I will give voice to your comment or your question. Before we start with Caesar, I just had two comments to make with Brother John here, and that is an observation. Whether you go to police school, whether you go to law school, whether you go to a school to become a CPA, the curriculum that you are exposed to which you're graded from, and let's even add to that medical school as well, the curriculum that you're studying is curriculum approved by the government, and if you just give it a thought, is the government attempting to steer the course in a particular direction to arrive at a particular outcome that may be beneficial, more beneficial to the government? That's the first thing. When you look at just this recent COVID thing, we can easily see that there were cures in place, both medical cures like the ivermectin and other things, as well as natural cures, dosing down with garlic and honey, all, you know, another different natural products that can knock a cold out actually quicker than this other stuff. So is an attorney purposely educated in law school not to know about two classes of citizenry in our country? Is our realtors taught in their schools that there's no such thing as holding land in allodium? And, you know, the questions go on and on. So I'm saying this more in support of what Brother John has been talking about as he has to deal with educating those that, you know, hold office, that are going to testify against you, that are going to adjudicate a matter over you. You have to educate them. And I just like to sit back and watch John operate as he goes through those things. I have the privilege of reading the briefs and the other court filings, so I get my education for free. Anyways, that was the one thing I wanted to say. The other, I forgot. So when it pops back into my head, I'll bring that back up myself. So the first question comes to Caesar in California. Go ahead, Caesar.
Hi, John and Michael. Thanks so much. I just want to, it's not a comment, more than a question. When you were talking about humidity, I am actually, you can testify that I corrected my status and is a path of humidity, where you're honoring your God and getting into a deeper connection with freedom, which is exactly what he is. And I also can say that I'm extremely privileged to deal with the likes of John. I mean, same as Michael, you know, learning a lot from my own case. So I wanted to be very appreciative of that. And again, if you're going to follow this path, always take it with humility. And we're loving your heart for your creator, and he will take care of the rest for you. And, John, I hope I can talk to you tomorrow. Thank you so much, Michael.
You, my honored friend, are a tough person to get a hold of.
I guess
we've been having this square dance of phone tag. I guess both of us are hard to get a hold of, and I apologize. I'm hoping that within a day or two, two or three days, I'll be in other jurisdictions where things will ring through a little easier. I had a challenge today where I thought I had a computer crash. The screen went black, and I couldn't seem to get it booted or anything else. It turns out it was a screen failure. I didn't have any of the problems, but it's going to still be a day or two for it, possibly. I'm going to see if I can go get a screen in town. But I have a rough printout of some of the argument for the motion that I'm going to suggest that you file. And if you'd like, it may take close to 40 or 50 seconds, but I could read it for you. Would you be interested?
Yeah. If that's okay. With your audience, I don't know. No,
okay.
I'll
try to be very quickly. Caesar is filing a suit against a U.S. government, and they've been coloring outside the lines. They've been breaking the rules, and he's got an unbelievable preponderance of evidence against them that he has collected, that he's worked very hard to collect. And then they told him that they couldn't have the assistance of counsel, and it hasn't even gone to the place where everybody's been, quote-unquote, acceptably served. But the federal prosecutor is saying that, well, I can't talk to that person because they're not a member of the bar, you know, and that's unconstitutional. So with that preface, I've printed out a little bit of, and I've got some handwriting. So as soon as I get my capacity to get back into it, I'll finish this. But defendant is not seeking for this individual to represent me, only to assist me in court so I can present myself sui juris. I respectfully request that the honorable court show me sui juris and not pro se. The concept of representation in America only started with the American Bar Association after it was founded on August 21st, 1878 in Saratoga Springs, New York. This was 87 years after the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution was ratified in December 15, 1791. The State Bar Association of California was incorporated in 1934, and therefore contractual concept of representation cannot be construed to have any support, strength, or relationship from the Constitution or the Sixth Amendment. And while the Bar Association has a very honored constituency of state individuals, no state or United States legislature has approved or ratified any legislation that gives the Bar Association, whose membership is voluntary, any authority to make law or rule so it can modify or amend any existing law or the Constitution for the United States, period. In fact, the opposite exists. The judicial branch is prohibited by the Constitution from any legislative activities, Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution for the United States. Assistance versus representation. The concept of assistance of counsel allows a party to have an individual of their choosing present to assist the party in presenting themselves both during and at all times pertaining to trial. Period, paragraph. The concept of representation is to have an individual with fiduciary responsibility bound by an oath to speak for a party, period. This individual who has the authority to serve as one's agent or serve as one's attorney. An attorney can represent a client in litigation proceedings, settlement negotiations, or in transactional negotiations. Okay. That's the meat of, as soon as I'm able to get back to pounding keys, I'll finish that up for you. But that, there are other individuals on this call right now that something not vaguely unsimilar in the last 14 days, we have had judiciary that have been staunch, absolutely, you're not a member of the bar, no thank you, not one drop, don't come to us, we're not giving you an inch on that. And all of a sudden, one of the people in this call, she got a court order saying that an individual who's not a member of the bar hasn't had any retired 20 years ago, could represent her in court. And so your character building exercise with the federal prosecutor, we're going to send something along to Alice through the regular channels, you're going to have it filed in court right along with everything else so that Alice realizes that, oops, am I committing a federal felony? Okay, so I'm looking forward to chatting with you tomorrow or Friday, whatever day we're able to get to. I'm sorry, I'm still in kind of dark territory. Sometimes I have to drive up to 30 minutes to find good reception to get out. But I am very much looking forward to chatting with you, and we'll see what Alice thinks after she gets the rest of it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you, my honored brother. The Most High King's blessings be upon you.
All right, so
back to you, Michael.
So, Your Honor, am I correct to understand that you are going to execute a court order denying me of my Sixth Amendment right to counsel? Am I correct to understand that, sir?
You are spot on, Michael. You know, you're pretty good at this. You know, you should consider trying to see if you can help some other people with this. You are, you know, that was great.
I can't, John. I have a bad attitude, and I really can't help other people. I can't even help myself.
I've been accused of needing help also, but nothing I'll admit to in public. You know?
Okay. Before we get to our next caller, I did have a question for you. In law, John, can
yes, sir.
May a slave own property?
Okay. Now, that's a very, very good question. There is an act that was passed by Congress in 1861 that allowed slaves actually to own property, but normally I try to use the A word, not the B word, the and word, not the but word. You know, it's better to use the A word than the B word. But slave owners went into court and explained that, excuse me, this thing, this entity belongs to me, which means that everything that he owns or she belongs to me. So the basic tenets of that congressional act all fell on the dirt. So what happens is, even though there's law that applied expressly toward property of one plantation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the specifics of that was that before a slave was given his freedom and his emancipation, that he was given property to own by the owner of the plantation so that he could marry another individual and raise their family on it, and he was being kind. But what happened was that the owner of the other plantation from which with his bride was drawn claimed ownership of all the property and actually won. So if that doesn't answer your question, I don't know what does.
It is true, is it not, that a 14th Amendment citizen is, quote, property and a franchise of the United States, end quote?
Remember that this 14th Amendment was passed. Well, let me ask you a question. Was the 14th Amendment passed before or after the bankruptcy in with which the corporation to do business for the United States was set up.
60 years before?
Correct. So this was talking about capital U, lower N-I-T-E-D, capital S, lower S-T-A-T, or T-A-T-E-S, and the jurisdiction, and the state where they reside. So if you look at it in the context, if I remember right, it was passed by Congress on June 13, 1866, and remember, a person who can't see his screen, I'm guessing at that. I'm just shooting from the hip,
sure,
and going from memory, you know.
Sure.
But when it talks about the fact that they are apportioning representatives, now, originally, now here's a trivia pursuit for you, Mr. Edwards. What was the difference when you went to the polling place between the difference between representatives and senators? Who has everyone always been allowed to vote for both representatives and senators, or
no,
was there a division?
Landowners were distinct from anybody else.
Correct, and they were allowed to vote for senators and representatives, weren't they? But residents,
yes,
were only allowed to vote for representatives. Okay, so the 14th Amendment apportioned among the several states the representatives by the population and divided. Now, so that if a state all of a sudden had a population bloom, that they would have the appropriate representation of representatives, but there are still two senators per state. And the 14th Amendment does not address anything regarding the Senate, does it?
No. No.
Okay. So at this juncture, as far as the apportionment and numbers, okay, the there's a handful of other things that are addressed by the 14th Amendment directly relating to a senator. But it does not address any of the apportionment and the amount of individuals that it applies to. This was all pre-bankruptcy, pre-1933, the last validly duly constituted and voted for elected senators / electors left office in 1938.
Right.
Okay, just as back to you.
Just as a bit of trivia, how many know that aliens, legal aliens or illegal aliens, as well as citizens, being American nationals or being United States citizens, all count towards the number of representatives of a state? Illegal aliens count as well. Just
because they are, because they are currently residents. You're exactly correct.
All right.
Back to the calls, back to the phones.
Okay, so my last question before we get to Charlie is, may a slave enter into a contract? Is a slave on the level of a minor with regards to contracts?
There is no such thing as a minor verb to the Constitution. I'll have to ask you the question, where in the Constitution, and I know you asked me this just so you would taunt me and trigger this response, so I'll acquiesce and I'll give it to you. The question is, where in the Constitution does it specify an age that those inalienable rights are alienated from an individual, you know?
All right. Next
right,
is,
right.
Next is Uncle Charlie. Go ahead, Uncle Charlie.
Okay. I got on about a quarter after, so I may have missed this definition. But anyways, regarding allodial title and patent, land patent, they're apparently, just from the discussion, two different things, each to be pursued, one before the other. I'm a little foggy on that. And also, let me ask or mention, I found in my notes just recently where GW had said correcting your status is foundational before you pursue a land patent. Is
correct.
I didn't hear anything about that tonight, but anyway.
Well, that was my question.
Charlie, okay. Can I go ahead and address that one?
Pretty please.
Charlie, first of all, what state are you calling in from?
Oklahoma.
An honor and a privilege to have you on the call tonight, sir. Okay. I think we're going to reverse the order that we answer your questions. Now, if somebody is misperceived to not have the correct status, does that actually change their real status? This would be borderline a GW question. And GW is sitting 25 feet from me right now. I could get him on this call if we need to. just because somebody does not understand your correct status and in their little diary or notepad or their little scribbles, they have you listed as something that you're not, in their mind, that they may disqualify you from certain rights or sovereignty. But does that actually, does a misperception on their part constitute a loss of rights or wrongdoing on your part?
Well, I would say no.
Very good. I would have to agree with you, Charlie. I really would. To that end, can someone who is not a sovereign or not a let me rephrase that. Your Honor, may I rephrase the question? Someone who is not a or someone who is a slave who has not been removed from slavery, can they legitimately, knowing the discussion, the cussing and discussing we just had about legislation back from the 1860s, 1861, and 1862, knowing how it ended up in court where the owner of that slave claimed rights to the property and actually won, can you go get your land patent? Okay, and now, a land patent, if you're going to get it post-transaction. Now, some people might ask, well, what do you mean by post-transaction? Meaning that it's been sold or conveyed more than once. If the person signing the land patent, and you're not going to get the same response that others got previously that we talked about, where even in the last 12 months, I've now seen 9 land patents that were signed by Andrew Jackson personally. And 4 of them, I've seen the wet signed document. Okay. But when he gave you that land patent, that meant that there was no liens, levies, or judgments against it. It was, Charlie, have you heard the term fee simple before?
I heard the term, but I wouldn't be able to define it.
Okay. May I define it for you?
Please.
Okay. Fee simple means that there is no liens or loans, levies or judgments against it, meaning that it is truly debt-free. When you get a land patent, that's certifying that your property is fee simple. So If you have not done the search and the research to establish a title in Allodium, meaning that you verified what has been encumbered and what is not, and has certain things been conveyed that, you know, and you don't know what easements or taxes or whatever has been on that, can somebody legitimately issue a land patent? Charlie?
It would seem hard to do.
Yeah, no. Probably not. Once again, Charlie, I would agree with you. So your questions about seeking title in Allodium or the etymology of your title would kind of have to precede getting the land patent, wouldn't it? Just by very definition, wouldn't it?
Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Now, to own property, now if you've done all this, you know, if it's held by, say, a charitable religious trust or a corporation of soul, are you technically the owner, or is the entity the owner of that property?
Well, the entity would be, I presume.
No. Even if you're a slave, can you be a trustee for that entity? Is there anything preventing you from being a trustee to that entity?
Not that I'm aware of.
You know what? Once again, Charlie, I would have to agree with you. There's nothing that I'm aware of. Why do you need me? You seem to know all the answers already. You got this thing down. Charlie, you got this thing down, Pat. You're great. Okay. I love you, brother. You rock. If you haven't, or you haven't got your status corrected, and I heartily encourage to get with GW if you have not. I would hardly recommend that you get it corrected as quickly as possible. And if you had transfers of property into your name while you did not technically have the capacity to own them, maybe you want to get with Bernie and establish a corp sole and a charitable religious trust to hold that property legally, while any question of your capacity, as Michael Edwards clearly pointed out, and I stopped him because before he gave the answer, I hate it when people tell the ending, they go to the last page in the book and then tell the ending. But what he was, his point, I wanted to ask these questions before he made that point, is that no, a slave cannot.
Cannot own property.
That's correct. Well, okay, let me rephrase that. By statute that was, by actually three statutes that were enacted in 1861 and 1862, you could own property. The slave could own property, but is it possible for the owner of that slave to come take it away just like a breath of the wind? Yeah.
Apparently so. Did I?
So, go ahead.
Understand you to imply or say that if the slave was a trustee of a TRT, that would work.
There is, to my knowledge to date, and I have found nothing litigiously, meaning in legislation that, or in basic concept, that would prevent a slave from being a trustee. In fact, quite the opposite. this, because the slave doesn't own the property, the owner of the slave cannot seize it. He's only the trustee committing a fiduciary responsibility to the trust.
Yeah.
See how that works, Charlie?
Yeah, it's very
nice.
Have
you been drinking from the fire hose, brother?
this is a way of learning the system that you all have, the team provides. It's like microdoses over and over. So
and I'm one of the little fish when it comes to the team. We've got incredibly big fish like Justice Beshears and GW that are just monuments, and they're places that a person could anchor to and tie up to and be protected. I'm just one of the little fish. I'm just one of the humble other information providers on the team, but there are those like GW and Justice Beshears. I kid you not, those guys, and I've only known Justice Beshears probably about 30 years, and some of the things and the conspiracies we've gotten ourselves in and out of, and we helped other people get in and out of, and stuff that we learned together, you would not believe. Stuff that we did in the 90s, helping people get to the place where they were honorable without enslavement before their Most High King or that quote-unquote intelligent designer. And Justice Beshears has honorably served his students and those people all these many years. And I just, like I said, I'm a small fish. I just try to keep up with the big fish.
I recognize a lot of humble teamsters here. So thank you very much for your service and assistance.
You're welcome. Any other questions, Charlie?
No. That's all
with that,
now. Thank you.
With that, back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael.
All right. Next is Bruce, then followed by Jennifer. Go ahead, Bruce.
Thank you. Thanks for your guys' time tonight. It's going
Bruce, what
long.
State are you calling in from?
Texas.
Hey, okay.
So in regards to the land patent or a lodial title, does that include mineral rights to that land?
The mineral rights are absolutely affected. The conveyance of mineral rights out of...
And in Texas, they're separable in many cases. You can sell your mineral rights and not the surface. You sell both.
Correct.
Or one.
One or the other or both.
How does the land patent, how is that affected? Is that automatically included? Is it not? How does that work?
That's a very good question. I'm glad you asked. Would you like an answer, Bruce?
Love one, because I have done.
Okay.
I've been in the oil and gas business for years, decades ago.
Hey, when Bill Clinton, I don't go to filling stations anymore. When Bill Clinton was in office, he gave me enough gas to last a lifetime. Oh. May I ask you a couple of questions? Would that be okay?
Yeah.
Okay. If you have an orange tree on your property and you sell the oranges, does that affect your tax status or your authority over that land?
No.
Okay. If you if you have oil underneath and you sell some of that oil, like the oranges on top, does that affect your tax status or your is there any legislation anywhere in Texas that says that if you've done the oil now, if you sold some of your minerals that or the water, that now you don't have certain other rights?
No effect. Now, you would owe taxes on the revenue that you made, and in the case you have depletion allowance, and you'd pay tax on your income and things like that.
Right. And so you would have to pay sales tax, and you have to go to the State Controller of Public Accounts, and, because you sold those three oranges and you made 12 cents on it, you have to pay tax on that 12 cents. If you sold that gallon of oil that was oozing out through the, and you scooped it up and pumped it into a one-gallon bucket, and you sold that bucket for $3, you have to pay tax, sales tax, on that $3, don't you?
Correct.
But does that require the payment of property tax?
No, not in any way, shape, form, or fashion that I know of.
Okay. Now, does that change your authority that you have been given by the ownership of that property over that property? Does it change?
No, but that's not where my question is.
You used the B word. You said no, but. Okay. Now, so let's try to use the A word and when we can.
The question really is, if I have a land patent, does that automatically cover mineral rights?
The answer is yes and no. If you have contractually sold off the mineral rights previously to gain the land patent, it does not de facto automatically restore your mineral rights to you.
That's the question. And then I guess the follow-up question is, if I acquired the land without mineral rights, so someone had sold that off previously, which happens all the time here, so that just means I'm no longer paying property taxes to the government. However, someone else is responsible for whatever taxes may be due on the mineral estate.
On the sales that occur.
Correct.
Okay. Now, in Texas, like Florida, those are ad valorem taxes, meaning actual value, okay?
Right.
Now, to date, there has been no, and we've gone through three separate sessions in the state senate in Austin where individuals tried to taxing authority, and one of them, the big ones that blew up was in Grimes County. Another one that blew up was in Kimball County. And the other was out in El Paso, where the assessor collector, the appraisal district, and in Texas it's called an appraisal district, tried to quantify the value of the mineral assets, the underground mineral assets, and charge tax, and it was all three times it was struck down.
Yeah, because you don't know what it is, because you don't know what it's worth before you get it out, how much it's going to cost to get it out, what your net profit,
That is exactly the argument that all three were struck down.
Yeah, I've had interest in wells that where we lost money. And,
yeah, I got a flashlight. Can you help you find it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know. We punched a few holes in Tehachapi, California, that actually some of them turned out to be very good. But when the gentleman we bought the property from passed away and hadn't completed the transaction, the arguments and the infighting amongst the heirs, Craig and I just walked away from them, and back in the mid-late 70s, early 80s, that was quite a significant thing to walk away from over $300,000 worth of, you know, and over 12,000 feet of 8 3/4 inch casing.
And
three and three quarter drill rod, you know, that was, that kind of almost hurt your heart. Have we come close to answering your question?
Yes, you did. If you've, in effect, if you've sold a piece of your property, in this instance, the mineral rights, then that's not included in the land patent if it was not included when you acquired the property.
Exactly.
Okay.
Very good.
That answers my question.
Okay. Okay. Martin, Michael, back to you guys. Here's Jennifer.
Here's Jennifer.
Hi there.
Hey, young lady.
I'm driving, so I'm just wondering if you can hear me okay.
I can hear you okay. Did you hear earlier in the call? And I tried to get a hold of you. We ended up with a difficulty where the screen went black, and I thought it was a computer crash. Turns out it was just a deficiency in the cable that goes to the screen. I have not been able to finish your MTR yet, and I'm hoping that I can get out in the morning and get this thing I was supposed to go out in the morning and get it, see if I can get it back. It's out at being looked at and trying to repair it. So we'll try to get your MTR done just as quickly as possible. Your affidavit is also incomplete, so we need to as soon as I get capacity to pound keys back in my hands, I'll pound keys. Now, having just given you the quick sit rep that I was hoping to give you privately on individual line, how may we be an asset or a blessing for you, young lady?
Well, I had an interesting experience tonight on my drive to Queens. I guess I was pulled over for speeding, even though I wasn't going much faster than anyone else on the 87 freeway.
I told you, if I told you once, I've told you twice or 10 times, you're supposed to keep it below 200 knots, below 10,000 feet. That's an FAA regulation. Behave yourself.
Sorry, you know that I don't like being good. I like being naughty.
Yeah. Now, he did not have a card reader in his patrol vehicle, huh?
That's right. And so they couldn't read it. But they asked me an interesting question because I said, who owns the vehicle? And I said, a trust. And, well, it has to be under someone's name. I said, well, it's under my name because I'm the trustee. And I'm wondering because it is registered, but I'm wondering if that's why they gave me a speeding ticket for the car, but they didn't do anything about me not having a license. Because I kept saying, you've just got to call the State Department and they'll tell you because their machine wasn't telling them anything at all. It didn't give them an address or anything. So I had to tell her my address. And, well, I didn't say it was an address. I said I live at. And I said, this is my travel card, the passport card. And anyway, she gave me a speeding ticket, but I thought I might be arrested or something for not having a license, but I wasn't. So I thought that was pretty good. And I just am going to set proper paperwork and get rid of the tickets, and we should be good.
Yeah. Now, there are times I was towing a trailer a little while back, and the right taillight was flickering on it. And they pulled me over and were going to cite me for the thing. And I gave him my passport card, and he says, well, where's your driver's license? I says, is it okay if I dig through and see if I can find it? In the meantime, I've just got that for ID. And I asked him very nicely. He says, well, let me look into this. He went to his patrol car and came back and says, I see your name here. I can't find any other information. I says, really? How are, and I asked him, how hard would it be to call in and just ask him to run the number on my passport card there? He says, oh, I can do that. Disappeared, was gone almost 20 minutes. He comes back and says, sir, I apologize. And his exact words were, sir, I apologize for the inconvenience. Could you please see about getting that right rear taillight repaired so it doesn't flicker on your trailer? And also, could you try to keep it underneath the speed limit? And I was doing 22 over at the time. I didn't realize it, that the particular place, I try to drive, you know, within 1 or 2 miles of the speed limit. The speed limit went from 65 to 35. And there was a short 40. There was a short 40 distance, but I was driving cross country, and this was only 2.5 weeks ago. I was driving through, of all places, Louisiana, and they're the ones that stopped me. And it was on this walkabout, and he says, sir, you know, if you could drive us over, we'd really appreciate that. And I don't know what he saw or what he learned, but I did ask that parish sheriff to, and that's what they call the counties in their, in Louisiana's parishes. I asked him, sir, could I beg your grace? Would it be too much trouble to ask, to call in and to the station and ask them to run that number real quick for you? Would that be okay? And I asked him, I didn't say, I'm a American national and I demand, you know, horse feathers. But, you know, and he was very pleasant. I didn't know that his female deputy partner was standing on the other, I didn't realize she was standing on the other side of the car with her gun drawn and pointing through the van at the time. You know, it was, you know, they were, shall we say, a teeny bit prepared for an inappropriate response. Ouch. Right. Okay. So, you know, making sure that we treat, if they've been willing to step up and wear the uniform and the badge, I consider it an honor and privilege to be served by somebody of your quality and caliber who's stepped up to serve the public trust by wearing the uniform and the badge. Thank you. And today, today we were at an auto parts store, and there was a deputy sheriff in the store. He was trying to buy a battery for one of the patrol vehicles, you know, and the guy behind the counter wasn't able to intellectually help him. And so I looked at his picture that he took of the battery. I says, see this? This is a Type 65 class battery. And I walked him over and I showed him which batteries apply. It turns out there was only one out of the 40 or some odd different types of batteries they had. And I explained to him the difference between the posts and everything else. And I pulled it off the shelf and I said, here, let me carry it over for you. And he goes, no, I'll carry it, you know. And I says, and I told him that, I says, I really appreciate your thoughtful consideration in stepping up to wear the uniform to protect and serve the public trust and wear the badge. That means a lot to me. And I gave him a high knuckle, you know. Well, 30 minutes later, we were driving, we were coming back into town, and woo! and I wasn't driving. This deputy sheriff is the one pulling us over. His license registration, sir, do you know that you were doing 26 over the speed limit, this and that? And we, he looks over and saw me in the right seat and says, oh, John. And he said, and then he asked the driver, is this your address correct on your registration? He goes, yeah, on your driver's license, is that correct? He says, well, thank you. Could you please slow down? Have a nice day. And he let us go. That happened only 6 hours ago. Yeah. So, you know, how we treat our fellow person, even in an auto parts store, that was, and the person I was with was just dead shocked. And he says, how does he know your name? You're in my duck pond, you know. And I says, well, you, while you're waiting out in the car, you know, they were waiting to see if my parts that I'd ordered had come in and that I'd paid for had come in, and he needed help. And so I helped him when I was in the store, and I explained to him, you know, and I got a chance to prove that you never know who's watching and what's going on.
That's right.
Hey, as soon as we get your MTR and your affidavit done, ready for you to look at and evaluate and determine if that's if I've met your request properly, we'll give you a call tomorrow, okay?
Okay, well, thanks a lot, John.
Okay. Thank you, Jennifer Sue. Always a privilege and a pleasure to chat with you, girl. You rock.
Thank you. With that,
back to Martin and back to Michael.
All righty. Thank you so very much. I just want to remind everyone tomorrow that we will be presenting Hess Levin's Limited Liability Company and how it affects you as a potential employee to be translated to a worker. Or how, if you're opening a business or have an established business, how you may consider rearranging your affairs as to minimize any tax liability that you may have. So that's what we have for tomorrow. John, any closing comments?
When you go into a dark room, no matter how... can you still hear me?
Yeah, you just go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay. When you go into a dark room, no matter how bright or how dim your light is, the darker the night, the brighter the light. If what you have is all you have, when you're setting an example to make a difference for Lady Liberty and restoring liberty to America, the worse off it is, the more refreshing you are. The drier it is, if you only have one cup of water to share with a handful of people, the worse the heat is and the drier it is, the more that little bit of water you have is appreciated. You never know how much they might really appreciate what you do. Go out to make a difference. Go out, live your life shocking your fellow person with uncommon acts of kindness. Thank you.
All righty. Until tomorrow night, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.